Blog Talk Radio.
Found us, Masonic Effects, a place where we talk about themes and issues relating in large manner to things Masonic. It's almost as if we create the dialectic that it seems so challenging within the fabric of masonry. And one would we'll talk about that a bit later this morning. This afternoon, settle in with your favorite or evening wherever you happen to be in the face of the earth. I'd like to acknowledge the listeners from Russia that have been joining us, as well as India, North America, and England and Scotland. Thank you very much. Norway, Scandinavia, thank you very much for tuning in and being part of the support. It's much, much appreciated. We have a lively program today. I think you're going to like it, and it's in pursuit of opening up the answers, opening up and revealing some answers. And I simply want to say from the onset that I've been thinking over the past week or so, and I want to apologize for not being on air the last couple of weeks. It was I was knocked down with a bit of an illness, and I don't have a way of I haven't quite figured out how to post that for regular listeners. So I apologize for I'm back in the saddle right now with a sip of something to help my throat, and we'll plunge on. But I did want to explain to you and apologize for the interruption. I've been adding to the books that I think you that are must reads, and we'll talk about why it's important to be. To understand the nature of the man as a precursor to understanding the nature of a Mason. And it would be like trying to understand what warmth is without understanding anything about the sun. It's something that would be lost perhaps to the poets. So I have some interesting music going on, but today I want to just to express something that I think is in the background that needs to be mentioned, and this goes out to all of the relatives of soldiers. And this is a battle. I want to talk about a battle that has long since passed in some ways, but not so much. Battle is an expression of the human condition, and quite frankly, it's one that puzzles me often. After the bloodlust and fear, the politics of it escapes me. And excuse me. And today, on all sides, the relatives and the people of the area. The Battle of Passchendaele was fought in World War I. It was massive casualties on all sides, mud. One of the greatest, often said to be one of the greatest disasters, as if that has any meaning. The greatest, what was the next greatest? Is there any of them that isn't in some way? When people give up their lives. It's kind of a remarkable, but understandable event. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm talking today a bit about George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel. He was a German philosopher. He was born in the 27th of August in 1770. He taught us that what experience and history teach us is this, that nations and governments have never learned anything from history or acted upon any lesson that they might have drawn from it. He also says nothing great in the world has ever been accomplished without passion. So a true believer is a man of the fabric that we use in masonry. He says mere goodness can achieve little against the power of nature. A man of some reflection, I think. An interesting man. What the important, the reason that I bring him up here today is about the word dialectic. He uses this word, it's not something that's necessarily in common use around the world. So I'll take a moment here, if you don't mind, just to explain what I think is the importance or relevance to masonry. Before Hegel, he passed away in 1831. Before him, the word dialectic referred to the process of argument and refutation through which philosophers sought to discover the truth. Plato's dialogues offer the prime example. It goes like this. One person advances a proposition or belief and Socrates refutes it and shows why that proposition is wrong, which clears the way for a better one, more convincing, to take its place. And the point of dialectic reasoning was to clear away misconceptions and arrive at first principles, basic fundamental truths on which we can all agree that the philosopher can use as a starting point on which to base a philosophical system. So just René Descartes' famous principle that if we're thinking, we at least can be sure that we exist. Though ridiculous for a foolish mind or weak mind, I suppose. Hegel used the dialectic for a much different purpose than arriving at first principles. And to understand what the dialectic means for Hegel, we have to first understand that he was an idealist. I kind of like that about him. You know, I like idealists. In the tradition of his predecessor, Kant, of course, you know, I have my well-thumbed copy of Moore's Utopia sitting here. Yeah, I know. Don't say it. But like Kant, Hegel believed that we do not perceive the world or anything in it directly, and that all our minds have access to is ideas of the world, images, perceptions, and concepts. Do you only ask this question when you notice it? For Kant and Hegel, the only reality we know is a virtual reality. Hegel's idealism differs from Kant's in two ways. First, Hegel believed that the ideas we have in the world are social, which is to say that the ideas that we possess individually are utterly shaped by the ideas that other people possess. so much for my narcissism, so much for my sense of smugness that I'm so bright and coming up with all these clever ideas. Our minds have been shaped by the thoughts of other people through the language we speak, and the traditions and mores of our society and the cultural and religious institutions of which we're a part. No, this isn't a railing against religion. Religion seems to be shooting itself in the foot continuously. Anyway, spirit is Hegel's name for the collective consciousness of a given society. Well, if you're Freemasonry, if you go down the path that sees Freemasonry as a society, then the collective consciousness of us is the spirit, which shapes the ideas and consciousness of each individual. So the second way that Hegel differs from Kant is that he sees spirit as evolving according to the same pattern in which ideas might evolve in an argument. Spirit evolving in the same kind of pattern, namely the dialectic. And first there is a thesis, an idea or proposition about the world and how we relate to it. Every thesis or idea in the world contains an inherent contradiction or flaw, which thus gives rise to its antithesis, a proposition that contradicts the thesis. And finally, the antithesis and thesis are reconciled into synthesis, a new idea combining elements of both. So let me put this out there to you and call on your wisdom and imagination. Does this aspect have a bearing? Well, yeah, it's sort of, that's sort of asking, you know, asking a child about Santa. Mm-hmm. Does it have a bearing? Well, of course. The question isn't whether it exists or not, but where it is. Where it is. Where is this thesis and antithesis and the reconciliation into synthesis? Where does that happen in Masonry? It happens, of course. And I do think in a large measure that Masonry stands up to the definition of a society. Whether it is a culture is different, I think. But that means we have to consider these questions separately. Society or culture, or a hobby. For some, it is, and I think that's the Albert Pike is prone to hint. He was a bit of a dilettante, which you have to I think one has to admire at some level. Not a fool, but certainly well-read, and I think that's important for any of us to progress. It's important that we be educated to progress as a man and as a Mason. I use often, as a standard, my dear grandfather. A student of the King James Bible. I know we live in a time that mocks spirituality, have done for a long time. Mocking religion is religion has fallen from the sky. It's fallen all around us, and it's shattered. And in spite of the protests and the desire to have selective amnesia, it is what it is. These events happening around us are happening, and they are shaping the society. And it's important for us to understand the elements and aspects of what's going on currently that shape the society that influence us. If you subscribe to this notion of the dialectic as Hegel, as George was using it, are you influenced? if you're not influenced in this way, then what influences you? And then where do your thoughts originate? In the recesses and crevices of cerebellum? Is that it? Oh, some magical process? Oh, come on, I know there are people that don't that discount that the Earth is round, and then the majority of people in some of the major industrial nations in North America that don't subscribe to the notion of evolution. But the one thing about science is that it's reliable. It's the same today as it was yesterday. Oh, get up on your hind legs. Yes, we have new discoveries that change our thinking. So does that mean that you're using that as an excuse not to use the math and not to use the science around you because it might be prone to discovery? Now, where does that stunningly original idea come from? Where did you come up with that? Because it's the truth and it's the way you see it? How do you know that? No, really. Did somebody tell you? So these ideas then aren't original or they're not yours? Different world when we look beyond the rhetoric and propaganda and manipulation. Different world when we realize that we have a task to take the media in hand and use it cautiously. We didn't need a spokesman for the current president talking about, you know, alternative truths. We didn't need that. We've always understood that people can be deceptive. Any thinking man has. That's truly, listen, brethren, ladies and gentlemen, is that not the truth? No, we can't overcome as smug and as smart and bright and clever as we might be. We can't overcome nature. But where do your ideas come from? And which do you select? What's that process where you select that this group of ideas from society merits support and will become my or your idea? But what if my idea differs? What if I haven't given the matter much thought at all? This brings me around to, I think, a lively thesis today. So I want you to sit back for the next hour and consider the propositions that I put forward, but in the sense of the dialectic, as Hegel would teach us. Remember, he was referring to history as revealing freedom and reason. How exciting! How exciting to put history in a context. What's the purpose of history? What does it do? Do these questions, I think these are reasonable questions. I don't apologize. I think these are reasonable questions for a thinking person. Yeah, I do. Here's a little bit of mood-altering music. I think around the world, we have an appreciation for an understanding for a common language. The great nations, the pride of these nations. Oh, the politicians twisted into nationalism. Nationalism simply saying, well, you know, we have to build our confidence by deriding other nations. The truth is, these nations are proud and dominant, and have a unique and special history and purpose and a role that affects all of us in the great global community. And so today, sit back and let this be a recognition, a nod, a shout out to all of that. Here, Chet Baker, Bill Evans, 1959. Be right back. Thank you. Yeah. Brilliant. Just absolutely brilliant and soft. Nice way to move on with the program. I think you'll agree that Pepper Adams on the baritone sax was just exquisite in the day. Mm-hmm. You're a little stretch for your, a little exercise for your imagination, if you don't mind. We don't dance anymore, but we still have the feeling. Don't let our age fool you. Life has not sapped away. Age is a process that makes us fuller, richer, a wine to savor for those who have a taste for it. If anyone taught you the best of masonry was lost in history, they were testing you. You can't be faulted for believing, even for a moment. Some blends, some chemicals have instant reactions. Others require time or pressure or even a change in temperature before we get an effect. The past is an opportunity for chemistry to take effect. Can your future be predicted? In a sense, what comes tomorrow is the blend of all the colors of a rainbow. Sequences out of step become sequences with a purpose. All the practice, having faith in a great mentor, dedication to the goal, to see how far, how much talent we have locked inside. Failure becoming translucent lessons until we become our future. So are we so audacious to think as such? Or are we thinking masonry has made the choice for us? That we drew a line in the sand of time and imagination and made a choice that we had enough ideas. There was no room for any more. There was no need. New ideas were a threat, ripples in the pond. Or do new ideas excite you? Does knowing that living a principled life has benefit compel you to be a character of yourself as a man worthy of being known as a true Mason? Oh, so very many challenges to face alone. Discouragement, fear, failure, ego, hubris, humility. Emerging in the knowledge that you know so very little in a world of experts. And Mason in you, find bliss, the light of understanding. This is a young boy, Malaysian boy, named Joey Alexander. He's at the Copenhagen Jazz Festival 2014.
Thank you very much. And
sit back and be amazed.
Thank you for coming here all. And also, I would like to thank you too to the Mr. Ambassador of Indonesia. I've come here too. And also, now we like to play a standard called Softly. Wait, I forget. In the morning sunrise. And yeah, hope you enjoyed.
A little boy. Thank you. What's not to like, to think that, you know, for anybody to ever say the best is in the past is really reveals much more about their sense of anxieties and fears than the truth of nature. Listen to that. Joey Alexander. He must have been then, I think, about 11 years old. We have, let me talk to you about the commentary today. Two E's below middle C. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you will know that two E's below middle C is the lowest that the human voice can go. All of you opera fans will realize that. Especially you Wagnerian fans. How audacious of Wagner to write opera about the gods meddling in the affairs of man. Oh. Today I'm reminded of the Valkyrie. You know, those angels of death that flew over the battlefield to more personally select the ones that were to die. Grim reminder, Life comes, life goes. This is about Hegel, the great professor. Hegel, the mind who offered us a way to understand in a way that reason dispelled the familiar tones of reason, religious superstition, but not belief. Religious superstition, yeah. In my mind, we can separate that out. But of course, I'm a deist. Those individual freedoms were not the prerogative of France, but of humanity, and just in time to juxtapose such beliefs at the doorstep of the great war and wars ever after. Can we or should we discuss Masonic history as an outlier of such radical thinking, or continue to examine it from the safety of middle-class existence? Middle-class didn't exist when Masonic form was being created. Of course, a great deal of science and history didn't exist. You say that, one would almost think I'm of a mind that a class structure influences history. I think it's the other way around. Society influences class structure. Oh, this notion of a classless society, I think we've pretty much done away with that. We're haunted by certain truths. The deciding line, I think, for Masons, for true Masons, is this notion of exploitation. Some people, particularly within the capitalist economic framework, don't subscribe to the notion of exploitation. The amassing, Gates, certain people amassing an obscene amount of wealth, now $90 billion, and trying to salve the conscience by committing acts of philanthropy. I find repugnant, because I look at how much suffering, how many people go hungry, how many children go hungry at night, how many women are working the streets in order to provide for their families, how many of the young men feel disenfranchised and disconnected because there's no opportunity for meaningful and gainful employment, doing something purposeful. But that's what's necessary to support this obscene amount of wealth, way beyond reason. This question has been in the background and lingering, and we're seeing it come to fruition these days. Around the world, the presumption that the status quo will prevail has been disproven. And the notion that the most radical, the idea that couldn't possibly happen, really does happen, is a refutation of this notion of status quo. What does this do for us, gentlemen and ladies? As Masons, where's the compass point for us? We've never really been, for a time we were influenced greatly by trying to be good colonialist subjects. In the country where I am, we tried our hardest to be very good at being accepted by the colonialist mentality. Around the world, colonialism left a residue, and in some places a stain that is very hard to change. The history that touts the value is one part, but there are other histories. Just like through history, a lot of cultures have tried to erase the history of and the contribution of women, and now any intelligent mind knows that is an ideology that is quite suspect. The history will reveal, as Hegel suggests, a freedom and reason. So where does this put us in this day and age? Is Masonic history an outlier of such radical thinking? When Masonic foundations were being laid, the middle class didn't exist. That group, that life according to rules had not become a lifestyle. By coinciding with powerful political and social forces, Masonry avoided life-ending conflict. Coinciding. You learn to live with the big beast in the forest, yeah? But such a price we paid and continue to pay. No longer content to challenge capitalism, electing leaders who were generally caretakers has become the norm. Compliance became a point of familiarity. Roles within the dominant wind class became accessible, safe, predictable, and sought after. Group goals in exchange for willingly giving up of freedom for liberty. So at a time when it was safe to discuss radical ideas, and when one could draw whatever influence he or she felt evident. So what is history revealing to us? the utopian dream, everything wonderful, everything as serves our preconceived notions. Where the benevolence? It was exploitation, it was domination. Now, can we ethically just erase that part of our history? Because we need to, or we want to. Can we do that, like intellectually? And can we do that ethically as Masons? And if we can't, then where does that fit? Always thinking that how we define, how we are defined involves a much more complicated process than how we think about ourselves. The intellectual pursuit is key. It makes me step back, and if we unfold this a little bit, I think we can find some solutions and answers. I think one of the areas that I think is necessary in that path, the path after the misleading information of the initiations, not the experience, the misleading information, the path is one of discovery. And then discovery, and then discovery. What then? How does this define us? What does it say about us as a group? This is something that we can't discuss because we're so weak-minded? I absolutely don't accept that premise. That this is somehow culturally dominated by my gene pool or yours? I find that hard to accept. I find it very hard to understand because it's like saying that there is, the drive shaft was a development given to the world by Arabs. Do we think about that every time I hop in a vehicle? Well, no. Mathematics, the advances of science, if we break it all down, it's like this interesting soup, this interesting algorithm with different contributions from different cultures at different times. And then things evolve, things go on. And can we predict from the past? Can we use the past to predict? Well, we haven't so far, have we? We don't seem to have been able to do that. Here's something that helps me. This is I think if you haven't done yourself the favor of studying Alexander Pushkin, the great, perhaps the greatest Russian poet, you saved something very valuable. This is a treasure. This is his 1816 poem called Awakening. And that's really what I'm talking about here today with the commentary is awakening. Oh, dreams, my dreams. Where is your sweetness? Where are you? Joy of nightly fleetness? They're gone away. My fancies gay and now alone in darkness grown. I sleepless stay. The mute night hovers my bed above, in a flash alone turned cool and gone. Dreams of my love like a tense crowd, but still heart beats that longing sound and catches bits of dreams around. Love, hear my plea, hark to my prayer. Send back to me your visions fair, and by morn sky, again enchanted, let me die still unawakened. The dream, so gentle into that good night. Yeah. Here. This isn't just a live performance. This is on the street. Lydie Solomon. Check it out. Won't be able to play the whole thing, but you'll get the drift. Like a little Chopin on the street played by a concert pianist, is there? Oh, amazing. Amazing. So help me. Have you helped me with the answer to the question? The influence on you and your state of mind. Yeah. Tell me how understanding, dwelling on the history of the order rounds you out as a man. And without having an understanding of what are the qualities of a man, how is one to achieve improvement as a man? So I think the wanderings of the man of La Mancha taught us something very valuable about the nature of man. Was the message about this is a translation. So into the language that I speak, but I think the way of thinking is quite unique to a different culture, Spanish culture. But does the work, is it speaking to us about age, about honor, about conviction, about courage, about the individual, or is it speaking about the people that the journeyman came in contact with, during his, the traveler came in contact with different people? And the overall body of the reaction, the fair Alcidina, you know, traveling to support this quest, wasn't looked on harshly or cruelly, but with an element of kindness. Almost silly old man. We wish him well. And was he truly delusional in his reasoning? There's times when you begin to think that he understood how he appeared. And he talked about that. How does he appear to others that don't understand, that don't get the whole process? So masonry, far from being a dormant, is a vital, active part of a person's life. It inspires. It's imaginative. It is all those things that others say that it is. But it is only boring if you allow yourself to be bored with the process. How many times can you see ritual? Depends what the purpose is. So if you happen to be part of a Masonic diaspora, that does not mean you're weak. You know your motives. You know if you're applying yourself to your study, to your self-improvement. And that, I think, generally rests on this whole notion of study. Now, how you approach it, it's self-directed, isn't it? Masonry gives us baselines. The rest is really limited by your imagination. The imagination is triggered by asking the hard questions. And I think it's really important for you to start with the hard questions. And start with the questions around admissions of what you don't understand. And then pursue it. This way we start is by checking out what other people have done previously. What are their thoughts? How have they broken it down? Are you thinking, oh my goodness, don't be thinking that you're the first person to begin a pursuit of exploration without really understanding the process. We learn a new language as we go along. We learn when we're studying sciences. We may be able to articulate the process to anybody that's asking questions. But often these sciences have a language, a lexicon, all of their own. Because they're looking at measurement and quantity and compounds that are exceptional. So we unleash the opportunity, we're talking about the potential of the man. And we weave it here on Masonic Effects into a dialectic. Not that everything that comes out of Masonic Effects should be accepted carte blanche, far from it. But I wish that I could hear your counterpoints. I wish that I could hear the responses so that we can go back and forth, constantly refining, constantly improving. And then when we come to some conclusions, we can build on those. A fascinating process. So here, it's been a pleasure being with you today. I hope you push back and enjoy yourself as a Mason and have some satisfaction that what you've undertaken is a challenge. And if it isn't a challenge, it wouldn't be Masonry. The other day, I was waiting in line for a bit of food and people that had the line cleared. And when I got up to pay my bill, I was told that the young gentleman had already taken care of it. I noticed these were sort of people that I would, from a different culture than mine, new immigrants to this country, completely a class act, I thought, very generous. And I was impressed. I'm impressed by small things. Yeah. So commit those acts of random Masonic kindness, and then you might want to include yourself in it. If you're fighting against, if you're dealing with great peril, believe that there are other people who are around who have had their turn. It's never pleasant, but it evolves. The whole process evolves. Here, this is Little Jazz from Moscow Festival 2014. Thanks for joining us today. Look forward to seeing you again real soon. Some decent jazz.